Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Well, many of my listeners have gardens, either flower gardens or herb gardens or vegetable gardens or all of the above. Any kind of garden is both useful, I find, and therapeutic. Gardening is a great way to unplug from the stress of life. It's a little bit like going back to nature for a while, right? Flower gardens are beautiful, obviously. That is, if you do it right, you know, and everything works out right. And if you have the space for it, a vegetable garden is obviously valuable for what it produces. My wife and I spent, for example, more than 2 years looking for a small horse farm across parts of 4 states in the Southeast. And we had a long checklist of desirable features, and a garden space wasn't even on the list. But the place we bought had a big space for garden. It was already established, and it turns out to be one of the things we value most about the place. I mean, we laugh about the fact that it wasn't even on our list, and yet it should have been number 2 or 3 or something. Because to be able to pick from a wide selection of vine-ripened veggies that you know have no poisons on them, and different varieties of each thing, right, and eat them in an hour or so is a real pleasure. But not everyone has that kind of space. But you can do this on a small scale, even in a city apartment. And you can also make the garden fit into your decor and your whole lifestyle. That's our topic today, urban gardening. And I'll include within that a little bit of suburban gardening. My guest is probably the foremost expert on this topic. Her name is Robin Horton, and she runs a website and blog called Urban Gardens. It's actually urbangardensweb.com. Welcome, Robin.
Hi, Court. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm just fine. Appreciate you being on. You started out in the corporate world as a big city creative director and art director, and as the owner of a creative consulting firm. So how did you come to this particular focus, this niche for your work?
I had always had an interest in design and in cities and nature. And several years ago, more than I can even recall, I took a post-professional design workshop with a renowned magazine designer. And it was 5 days long, and in the last 24 hours, he challenged us to come up with an idea for a magazine, a print magazine at the time. And I didn't know why at the moment, but my idea was urban gardens. And I presented the idea, and it had a lot of ideas in it for small space gardening, kitchen gardening, xeriscaping, container gardening, and, you know, furniture and things like that, decor kinds of things. And when I was finished presenting it, and I thought I had done such a great job, he said, "That's a terrible idea. Who would want to read that?" So I was a little thrown off by it, but you know, having been a creative director and quite confident at presenting things, I responded with all the reasons why I thought it would make a great magazine or TV show or whatever. And this was about 15 years ago. So I put it away, and then I'd say about 7 years ago, the cover of New York Magazine was about urban rooftop gardens. And I thought, you know, I think that idea wasn't a bad idea I had a while back, and I'm going to pull it out again. But I didn't want to do a print magazine, and that was probably a good idea because they're very hard to maintain now. So I decided to publish it as a blog. I didn't really know what that was, so I had to learn everything about blogging and social media to promote it. And so I'm a designer. I designed it, and I listened and saw what people were talking about, and I just launched it freely from the seat of my pants, and it got popular. And through it, I learned a lot, and I've met some amazing people from all over the world. It's my love child.
Well, that's a great entrepreneurial story. Basically, you started out with one idea and got deflected and bounced off onto a related idea and that you didn't know much about, but you took off with it kind of with a wing and a hope and a prayer, and then it worked. So that's
kind of, that's you good, could say that.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
And you know, nowadays, things are very agile and adaptive and flexible, even businesses. You know, it used to be that you stayed at one place for 30 years, you did one thing. Now things change so rapidly, and that's true also of the internet and of blogs and of e-zines. You listen a lot and you hear what people are interested in, and that kind of dictates what you write about. And also during the process, I've found the things that I'm more interested in. So the blog has morphed and it's changed, and it probably will continue to do so. And that's one of the things I really love about it.
Yeah, it's great. It gives you a lot of flexibility. You know, you just mentioned the things you're interested in. And so I think maybe this encapsulates it, at least at the moment. I'm going to quote from the front page of your blog or your website. Again, it's urbangardensweb.com. Urban Gardens is a lifestyle story told from the ground up. It's about the whole circle, from planting a seed to cultivating a garden to harvesting, cooking, and then serving it all up in style with family and friends in outdoor rooms and indoor gardens. So in that whole concept I just described, I see farm-to-table type restaurants popping up in cities everywhere. I mean, I think Brooklyn is, you know, has several of them. It's a funny thing, you know, right in the middle of the biggest downtown there is, right? So it is a culinary trend. Is there a big movement that you see toward grow-it-yourself vegetable gardening in cities and suburbs where people who normally 20 years ago would have never thought of such a thing are really trying hard to do it now?
Absolutely. You know, it's not just on the small scale, but on the large scale, they go hand in hand. There's just, fewer and fewer amounts of land suitable for farming now. And also in, I think the statistic is something like by the year 2030, most of the world's population, a huge proportion of it anyway, will be living in cities. And there's going to be, no pun intended, a growing need for supplying them with food. Professor Dixon Despommier from Columbia University, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, in 1999 launched this idea about vertical farms on skyscrapers and in other ways with his class. And people kind of rolled their eyes and they thought, oh, it's impractical, it'll never happen. Well, as things do go, it has happened. On rooftops, there are huge ones, indoors, the largest vertical farm now in the world is supposedly in the world is opening in New Jersey. Arrow Farms is opening a 69,000 square foot indoor farm. It's hydroponic, and it's supposed to generate up to 2 million pounds of vegetables and herbs annually. Brooklyn Grange, very well known rooftop gardens in New York City. Green Sense Farms in Indiana and Chicago. Bright Farms is another big company doing this. In Japan, there are underground urban farms. There's one called the Pasona Urban Farm in Tokyo, 11,000 square feet. One in Mirai, 25,000 square feet. An old semiconductor factory converted into an urban farm that can yield 10,000 heads of lettuce per day. So that's on the large scale. But people also, on a smaller scale, are interested in knowing where their food comes from. And when they know where their food comes from, as you had said in your introduction, one, they know that how it's grown, and they can grow it without pesticides, and it's instant. You can save a little money after your initial investment generally, and it's instant. You can, you know, pick something and eat it right then and there. More and more, people are interested in that. Part of it, What I found is that by growing something yourself, even if it's just a windowsill little container garden, you feel like you're contributing something to the greater good of nature and the environment. And plus, I think people feel a little connected to a community that way. It's healthy, for one thing. And yeah, a lot of farm to table. You know, when I go to Europe, people don't use that term because almost everything is farm to table there. People eat locally in a much greater way there than we do here. I mean, we have a big country, you know, a carrot, your typical carrot apparently travels 1,000 miles before it gets to your table. And that's we're not even going to talk about the carbon issue. Yeah, when you grow it locally or on a rooftop farm above your restaurant and you serve it to your customers, it's going to be taste pretty fresh. There's a restaurant in Manhattan called Bell Book and Candle. I've written about him. And he hoists vegetables down from his rooftop into the kitchen. He has a pail bucket with on a rope, and he goes up and they're hydroponic towers, and he hoists them down into the kitchen. It's the same system that's used. There's an urban farm in O'Hare Airport in Chicago. They're little vertical towers, hydroponic towers.
Yes, I'm interested in some of these concepts that I'm not very familiar with. I mean, mostly you see a garden plot on the ground, right? But in an apartment, you see, you know, boxes in a balcony or window boxes, or at most like a raised bed maybe on a balcony floor. And, you know, so those are all common old-fashioned concepts that are easy to understand. But you're talking about maybe some things that are more high-tech. And when you talked about the huge vertical wall garden, you're not talking about on the outside of a building, are you?
I suppose you could grow food on the outside of a building, but there, I am talking about that. Well, in part, there are a lot of buildings that are now either having green roofs, and those are for more environmental reasons. They could grow food, but they tend to be for insulation, and you know, that's a whole other radio show. But green roofs and green walls, they're partly for beautification, but they have insulation and sound barrier qualities. But you can have a green wall on your balcony, let's say. You can have one inside your apartment. You could have it outside your home anywhere in the suburbs or even in a rural area where you can grow food vertically. You know, there are a lot of products on the market, commercially available products like felt pockets made from recycled water bottles, metal containers, plastic containers that they're modular and you can build a green wall from them. Some people grow ornamentals, some people grow vegetables. You could grow a combination of the two, you know, just as you would in a garden, mixing ornamentals with vegetables, you know, to attract beneficials. You know, there are all kinds of things you can do. There are do-it-yourself methods for creating vertical gardens or green walls. Living walls are also referred to as, or eco walls. I've written about many of them. Some people could have taken those shoe trees that you can buy. They are like pockets and they're for hanging over the door to store your shoes. Mm-hmm. And they punch little holes in the bottom for drainage, and they've planted, you know, vegetables or ornamentals in those. You know, if you're a crafty person, you can find lots of ways to upcycle or recycle things to become planters.
Well, you know, so I am still interested, though. You talked about the towers, I guess they are, where people are harvesting hundreds or thousands of heads of lettuce, and the guy in Manhattan with a restaurant who brings the stuff down in a bucket dumbwaiter for to the kitchen or whatever. How do they harvest that? Do they get up on ladders, or are there scaffoldings they get up on? I mean, I'm trying to picture this process. It sounds like Cirque du Soleil or something. You know?
No, they're quite simple. Well, his is a little, little analog and old-fashioned the way he does it. But hey, you know, if something works, it works, right? He doesn't have a dumbwaiter, and he didn't want to go up and down all the stairs. Plus, he's using the rooftop of a neighboring building. He's gotten permission from the owner of that building, so it's not actually on the rooftop above his restaurant. But many are. There are restaurants in Chicago. They're all over the place now where they're growing on a rooftop. In that case, these are towers. They're commercially made. You know, I can't recall the actual manufacturer name at the moment, but if you go on the blog, the story is about the restaurant Bell Book and Candle, and it's the same manufacturer, as I said, that has produced those towers that are in use in Chicago's at O'Hare Airport. I don't know. I think they're, I would say, about 4 feet tall, five feet tall.
Okay.
And they have various pods. They're hydroponic, so there's a nutrient system in them. They're soilless, as hydroponics are. Mm-hmm. So there's no need for any soil. You don't have to worry about the weather conditions. Actually, I asked him after the Hurricane Sandy in New York, all these vertical towers on the rooftop, if he lost them all, and he said he didn't. I guess they're pretty stable.
Okay, yeah, I was thinking you meant something 50 feet tall, and that's why I was asking if they had ladders to get up to them. So now it makes more sense if they're just head high. You can pick from them, so... You are listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Robin Horton, who is a, I don't know what to call her. She's an urban garden designer and creative consultant and, you know, an expert on all aspects of urban gardening. And I guess that encompasses, too, things like, I know that for quite a while, a lot of cities have set aside plots of land, you know, public land or private land that they've bought or whatever, for residents who have no space to use as small gardens, like a garden plot. You know, maybe you might have 15 by 20 feet or something. How widespread is that phenomenon nowadays, do you know?
You're talking about community gardens, and it's pretty widespread. I believe that more and more are popping up. My friend Lamanda Joy in Chicago launched the Peterson Garden Project a few years ago, and she was inspired by the Victory Gardens during World War II. And she had come across an empty lot, where in fact there had been an original Victory Garden. And she decided to further this idea. So what they do now, I think she has 6 or 7 of these community gardens in the Chicago area, metropolitan area. And they take over these lots, and they're just temporary. You know, they get permission, obviously. They're not guerrilla gardeners, and they're disused lots, or they're lots that haven't been built on yet. And they build, I think they're 4x3x5 or 4x6 raised beds. And people apply to garden there, and they pay a small fee, and they get the raised bed. And then she offers classes. Now they offer cooking classes. They've installed a farm at the Field Museum in Chicago. And basically her goal is to teach people how to grow their own food. And of course, cooking it is an extension of it. So it's not just a method of growing your own food in a space where you might not have your own personal space to grow food, but it's an educational tool and a community thing. Community gardens grow community as well. That's an important thing. Mm-hmm. People get to know each other. And it's also, it's for the greater good of not just the individual, but of the community.
Yeah, I think it promotes, you know, a sense of neighborliness. And if a couple have a plot and they have their kids come work with them on the weekend to do it, then it's a family thing you do together that they wouldn't otherwise be doing. And it's also kind of an anti-poverty device in a way, because they get to save money by growing good things. They eat better. The nutrition's better. I mean, it's kind of a win-win-win multiple times kind of a thing for a city to do. So that's a...
Yes, they're very important in what we call food deserts. Those are the areas of urban areas that don't have access to fresh food. There might be a bodega or fast food place, you know, and having a community garden, again, it's educational and gets people to understand the value of eating nutritionally. But also they get involved and it empowers people. If you're growing your own, you feel empowered. Hmm. Also, that's why there are more vegetable gardens and prisons. They've found that it helps people. It gives them something to focus on. But besides that, when you're nurturing something and growing it yourself, it does offer a great sense of empowerment. You watch something grow and that you did it. You created that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's kind of akin to having a pet, you know, and being responsible for something that really depends on you. And,
except you don't eat your pet, but yes, that's true. I hope not.
In this country.
Anyway. But there are also people who grow, you may have heard this, the people who want to transform their front lawns into vegetable gardens. And there's been a trend now to change the zoning so that more and more people can grow their own and use their front lawns for gardens. A lot of cities have prosecuted people. It's crazy to me, but everyone wants everything uniform and they think it might look messy to have a beautiful vegetable garden in your front lawn. I don't understand that. I'd much rather see that than a lawn. But now people are rebelling and they're trying to reverse these ordinances and they want to transform their neighborhoods into, some people call them agri-hoods, and there's a trend toward growing your own food, but in addition, having urban chickens, lawnless landscapes where you have your planting food, you're keeping bees, and they donate, a lot of these people donate food to the people in the neighborhood. There are also people who let you sort of, I'll call it garden, adopt their garden, and they let people come in who don't have gardens and garden in their gardens. There are even apps out there where you can go on the app and find out, or websites where you can find out who's offering their gardens up for other people to garden.
Interesting.
The sharing community thing, right? The sharing economy where, like Airbnb, where you can go stay in someone else's house. And in the UK, you can go garden camping. You can sleep in someone's backyard for a small fee. And now you can share somebody's garden to grow food. I love the whole thing.
Yeah, I mentioned at the outset we would talk a little bit about suburban gardening. I know you're the diva of urban gardens, but you probably know a little bit about the suburban gardening lifestyle, let's say, and you just talked a little bit about a permutation of it that I wasn't aware of a push to have the right to grow a garden in your front yard. But for the typical quarter acre to half acre lot in a typical suburban subdivision, where most of the time people are going to have it in their backyard, are there kind of any things that aren't obvious that you could suggest maybe in terms of new products or new ways to grow things? I mean, maybe, you know, some kind of vertical wall or a tower in your backyard garden rather than just all flat?
Well, you could certainly do anything in your suburban garden, large or small, that you could do in a small space urban garden. People get very creative. If you have a blank wall, you know, I don't see why you couldn't grow a living wall there. If you have the space, a lot of people just do raised beds because then they don't have to deal with the soil that's there and tilling it and doing those sorts of things. There are various ways that it depends. You don't have to be that, you know, savvy a gardener nowadays. I know that consumers are looking for things that are that offer a great chance of success and are easy. in the urban setting, they also tend to like things that look good.
Yeah.
Beautiful products. Because you have such a small amount of space, you want to optimize it, and you want it to be visually pleasing too. If you have a backyard, you know, I suppose it depends on the person, you know. But there are so many commercially available kits now, and you know, Home Depot and Lowe's and all these big box places, they see the trends, and they're offering more and more prepackaged things to consumers to make it easy for them, so you don't have to be a really savvy gardener.
We both talked about the one value of growing your own food is not needing to use insecticides, but some people do. I mean, when you're going to have a lot of bugs chewing up your plants, it's a strong temptation to kill them with something other than picking them off one by one and stomping on them. So what do you think about, I mean, I don't use insecticides, but sometimes I'm sorely tempted to, right? And there are some biologicals that are not poisons that you can use that are pretty effective, actually. But what do you, you know, is there something you recommend or you use, or just in general, what do you think about insecticides and fertilizers versus totally, quote, organic gardening? What do you advise?
Well, it's a very big topic now, as you know, especially with the whole GMO controversy, which we won't get into, and whether or not people use, you know, very heavy-duty pesticides or weed killers like Roundup. We don't even want to go to that conversation. I try to eat organically as much as I can. Not everybody can do that because it can be more expensive, but when you're growing your own, for sure, you don't have to rely on those kinds of things. I would never spray it on my food. I don't know why anybody would. Like you said, there are a lot of biological type, you know, organic pesticide solutions you can use now. And you know, there are other ways to do it. You can grow things that attract beneficial insects, and also other plants that will attract insects that will keep pests away. There are a lot of natural ways to do this. That's a whole, again, another radio show about how to grow organically. And I'm definitely not the expert in that, but because businesses know now, even the big agro businesses are seeing, or the companies that make the not so beneficial products and the not so organic products, they're all starting, like Scotts, they're all starting to put out, I don't know how organic they really are, but they're seeing that's what consumers want. And I think you'll see more and more companies marketing those kinds of products. People don't want to eat food that has poison on it, whether it's grown commercially or in their own home. So yeah, there are lots of reasons, lots of ways that people can avoid that. Also, that's another reason some people like hydroponic gardening, because it's soilless and it doesn't have the need for fertilizers or pesticides.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. Again, I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking about urban gardening with Robin Horton, who is the founder and creative director of a blog and a website called urbangardensweb.com. And she is quite a maven on this topic around the world. I want to ask you, Robin, to tell us about some of the more unusual people and places that you've undoubtedly run across in your gardening adventures around the world. You mentioned guerrilla gardeners. It's a term I hadn't heard before, but I can kind of envision what it might be. But why don't you give us kind of a quick rundown on some of those things?
Well, guerrilla gardening is when people kind of, they're rebels and they take over, you know, disused land or disused spaces in generally in urban areas, and they plant things. It's usually not food, but I've seen it. Maybe they'll plant. They plant in all kinds of things. I've written about a number of them, and there's some of them are funny. Most of them are somewhat provocative. They're basically making statements about, you know, reclaiming public space for to grow gardens, and often to say that we should be growing gardens and not, you know, putting things that are unhealthy in our environment. I've seen people take over old dumpsters and grow gardens on the backs of trucks. Somebody in Canada took an old newspaper box and opened it up and planted a garden in that. It's kind of a fun movement. I've written a lot about it. If you go on the blog and you search guerrilla gardening, you can find it. I've met some really interesting people in my travels. One of the most interesting is he calls himself a landscape artist in Girona, Spain. That's about an hour north of Barcelona. His name is Marc Granyon, and he contacted me about a year and a half ago about his project called Phytokinetic. And he had done a lot of research with some very smart and learned people, some professors from the University of Madrid. So it was very well researched. And he produces green roofs for the tops of city buses and also other vehicles and cars. And I broke the story. It was picked up all over the world. And as a result, he's gotten loads and loads of projects from him, commissions, and he continues to build this this business. So he invited me to Spain to see what he was doing, and it was really pretty interesting. And you know, he's doing it, obviously the top of a bus is not necessarily the best place to grow a garden. And at first it wasn't for growing food, although now he has come up with methods for doing that. He uses a hydroponic foam. It's a very light substrate, and he uses that to plant things in. There's a soil layer too, but it's lightweight, so it doesn't add a lot of weight, obviously, at the top of the bus. And he has a whole irrigation system that's reuses condensation from the air conditioning system in the bus. It's really very interesting, but he partly did it to raise awareness. So you see this bus going around town, and people see it, and they become interested in, in what it is, and it piques conversation. But it's also beautiful. That was very interesting and unusual. I stayed in somebody's Paris apartment once for a week. She had two beautiful gardens. I've written about that.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of creative, interesting people like you're describing here around the world doing things partly to make a statement, but I mean, so it seems like it's somewhere between an art and a science and agriculture in a way, kind of blending those things in different ways.
That's a good way of putting it.
I have to say, I spent a few months trying to nail you down for this show. You're a major league globetrotter. what are the kinds of things you get involved in around the world? Just briefly, we just have a minute or so left here.
Well, one of the perks of the blog is it's really nice. I love to travel, and I've been invited to a lot of things around the world, some media tours, the Modanus blog tour. I've been to the London Design Festival. That was a week in London where the whole city turns into a big design festival. And everywhere I go, I find things related to what I write about. You know, it's either indoor, outdoor furniture, or, you know, container gardens, or ways to grow things indoors, or beautiful things to that also have a, you know, a gardening or nature aspect. So it's I'm really lucky to do that. Last year was invited to the Milan Design Week with the same group, the Modanus blog tour. We went to Venice first. It's all related. Like I said, growing it, harvesting it, cooking it, serving it in style. The same people who are interested in gardening are also interested in food and wine and travel, and because those things are all related.
You do seem kind of big league in this space, and I think it's partly because of your designer background, right? So your blog itself is award-winning, and you're recognized as an expert in writing and design in this kind of arena, and have won a lot of awards. If without getting into them specifically, if people want to go to Robin Horton's website, urbangardensweb.com, you can see some of the things that that she's won, which she's too modest to brag about here. But if I'd given her a chance, she might have. But anyway.
Thank you. Yeah.
If you'd like to learn more about urban gardening and all its forms, you know, again, go to the website. Or Robin is all over social media, right? So on Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest, it's at Urban Gardens. I think that's correct, right? On all of those formats or platforms.
That's right.
Urban Gardens. So take a look at all of that, and there's much more to learn. Thank you, Robin Horton, so much for being on with us and talking about urban gardening today.
Thank you for having me, Court.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.